Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm Blair. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Blair.
Hey, guys. It's really good to be here tonight. Thanks a lot, Alexa, for asking me to speak. I moved here in January from Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas for 4 years. And I'll just say that I wasn't nervous until that thing appeared. Is that for, like, quality control? Or, like, what's that about? Anyway. So, let's see. Gosh, my sobriety date is July 27th, 2010. I'm going to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I pretty much have the same story as everybody else. It involves a lot of geographics. It involves being uncomfortable in my own skin. It involves, you know, a lot of self-medicating. You know, I always hated to say, like, I felt like I didn't belong. I feel like that's not so. I feel like a lot of kids feel like that. A lot of kids feel like an outsider at times. I just remember always wanting to check out. No matter where I was, I just wanted to check out. And the book talks about two different kind of alcoholics. Talks about the manic alcoholic. I forgot the word that the big book uses. And it also talks about the depressive. I'm the depressive type. I like to do a lot of hiding. I like to do a lot of sleeping. There was a lot of sleeping for a while. I slept my way through. Managed to go to college. I slept my way through. There's no reason why I should have graduated at all. God, before I ever picked up any sort of a substance, you know, I'm an alcoholic through and through, but, drugs are also part of my story. They're a big part. And what it looked like for me, I was living in L.A. I had an apartment I couldn't pay for. I remember not being able to leave my place. And if I did leave, it would be like at 4 in the morning, and I'd go to the grocery store, and I'd, like, be concerned that everyone was looking at me buying, like, 7 packages of Nutter Butters or whatever it was that I would just throw up anyway. I still do it to this day. I'll go through, like, cycles, you know. It'll be, like, I'll obsess. You know, I've always been obsessive, and so I'll obsess on, like, I'll use whatever I can use. I don't know if you guys are like that, but I would use food and sleep and everything else. And so I'll go through these cycles of, like, it'll be Nutter Butters for like a month, and then that'll just go away, and then it'll be something else, you know, food-wise it'll be. I'll do it with music, too. I'll find a song with a hook that, like, puts me in a trance, kind of, and I'll listen to it over and over and over again till it puts me in a different state and I feel different, and that's how I escape. Even today, the difference today is that I feel less comfortable the longer I'm in that state. I can't stay there, and that's the difference today. Anyway, onwards. So, yeah, I was in L.A. I would wake up on my floor, and there my car would be crashed, and my stove would be on, and I couldn't pay for things, and I couldn't show up for anything, and I was letting everybody down, and I lost the best job I ever had. my best friend, who was my boss, fired me. I just found that out recently. I didn't know it at the time. I thought I was just laid off, you know. They were doing layoffs, you know. So I wanted to die. And, I wanted to die. But I didn't want to kill myself. So I was hoping, I started doing harder stuff, and I just hoped it would take care of it. So anyway, this job that I had gotten fired from, I worked with this guy. I went to a couple meetings, and they were really, I remember walking in to my first meeting, it was an NA meeting, and I looked around and I was like, I didn't understand why everyone wasn't sitting in a circle crying and slitting their wrists. The people were laughing, and I was like, that didn't make sense to me that everyone was having a good time. I thought that everyone should be slitting their wrists, I guess. And so I had to go in the bathroom and get loaded. So I tried a couple meetings, and this guy that I worked with, I ended up putting the Serenity Prayer on my Facebook page. And he responded and said, "Blair, you're singing my song." And I was like, "Hey, do you have time to talk?" Anyway, so he asked if I could benefit from treatment. And I said, I guess so. I don't know. And so my thought, I called this treatment center. They said they would take me. My thought was that they were going to come screaming around the corner in a van. I had seen Intervention before, and they were going to, I was supposed to go, "No!" And they were supposed to, like, drag me, and I was supposed to cry and scream, and they were supposed to shove me in the back of a van and then drive me to this treatment center. And they're like, "No, you're going to go there by noon, and you're going to get your own ass there." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I went to treatment. And I can't remember anything about treatment. I took classes, but it provided a safe place for me to go to get me away from substances, and I'm forever grateful for that. But the only thing I remember. The only thing that sticks out is that I met my sponsor, and they hooked me up. They introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was put with a sponsor. I refused to find one, so they were like, "Okay, we're going to assign you one." And I'll tell you that when I came downstairs, I met her. She was pretty, and she seemed like she had her shit together, so I didn't like her right away. She was nothing of what I wanted and exactly what I needed. She told me things like, "I don't need to know about your life till you've done your fourth step." She told me things like, "I'm not your friend, I'm your sponsor." She told me things like, "Feelings aren't fact." And I fought her tooth and nail on everything she told me to do, but I eventually did everything she told me to do. She told me to show up. She told me, how am I on time?
You
have
a couple minutes more.
Okay. She told me, she told me to suit up and show up. She told me, she basically just shared her experience with me and shared about how, basically what it's like to be a grown up. And the big thing was the feelings aren't fact thing. You know, I'm so uncomfortable with feelings, and I used and drank over feelings so much. So it's ironic that feelings are what the only thing I listen to and are what drive every decision in my life that I make, you know? If I feel something in any given moment, I can just destroy my entire world with the next action that I take, you know? And so what this program has given me is like a little pause, you know, to remember that my perception is fucked up. It's super jacked, my perception. And, you know, I can make a mountain out of a molehill, and the first place I come from is from my head, and my head is the problem, you know. So luckily, what this program has taught me is I get to put a little distance between my reaction time before I just screw up my entire life because of a feeling, you know. I'll end with this. We went to go visit my husband's great aunt and uncle, and they live in New York. They live outside of New York. And I've told this story before. You've heard it, Alexa. That's cross talk. I don't know what that is. Anyway, so basically, his uncle's on dialysis, and he talked about before he was on dialysis how his liver was failing, and how he was talking to us about how he was laying in bed, and they have like these decorative plates in their living room, and one of the plates had like a woman on it, and you know, I guess when your liver fails or whatever, or your kidneys are failing, whatever happens on dialysis, you hallucinate. And so he was talking about how this woman, like, got up off the plate and was coming into the room, he thought, to hurt him. And then he was also talking about how they were driving, and one day he thought that the overpass was, like, right here. The car is here. His head is here. Here's the overpass. He thought they were going to hit it. And here's this grown man. He was so scared. His eyes were he was terrified. And he said something that has stuck with me. I knew that it wasn't real. But it didn't matter because it still scared the living shit out of me. I still felt scared. And I thought, oh my God, that's how my feelings are. I know with my perception that I'm not seeing things right, but that doesn't make it less real how I feel, you know? So anyway, this program, like I said, puts distance between that, and I'm, like, eternally grateful for that because I can grow up, I can be a productive member of society, I can show up now, and I can do stuff I never thought that I could do before, so thank you.
Okay. Which one do you want?
Does
it still work? Does it work? I test.
Is it
on? Yeah.
My name is Anthony, and I am an alcoholic. Anthony. A lot of familiar faces. See what it was like, what happened, and let's just see how it goes, what it's like now. Wow, you know, as I was driving here, and I was raised in Oakland. It's this Steve Tops car, Herzog, right up the street from here. I forgot all about that detox. So I was driving by, I said, wow, it's not a detox anymore. But it's not the street for me. I never could stay in that detox. I never could. I'm more than an alcoholic. I use other substances. And when withdrawal comes, I'm out of there. I couldn't deal with withdrawal. I think that's one of the things that kept me from getting sober so long, not wanting to go through the withdrawal symptoms, heroin addict. But then I seen what alcoholics go through. Heroin withdrawal is nothing compared to what real alcoholics go through. Like I said, I was raised right out here, and I was raised in Oakland. Never came to North Oakland much, but I'm here now. I actually live in North Oakland, grew up in East Oakland. My mom and I got three brothers, broken family. My parents divorced. I was probably about divorced, but probably that tall. And my mom had to raise the four of us. So she worked a couple jobs, two jobs. She wasn't home a lot. So I took to the streets like a very young age. Took to the streets, and I call myself street raised. Because I know a lot about the streets, and that's one of my fears. I know how to survive out there in those streets. I barely, really, I wasn't surviving. I was just existing in actually. And I remember at 13, I took my first drink. I was at a friend's house. His mother had one of those bars. You know, them bars they used to have in the house with two seats, you know, and we were already being mischievous because we poured just a little bit out of every bottle because we didn't want them to know that we was in our alcohol. And it's hard liquor, and I remember drinking that straight down, and I never forget the sensation and the feeling I got from that. And I'm no different from anybody else, and I'm going to repeat some things that you guys have told me. I don't have no great revelations. This is stuff I've heard since I've been going to the rooms. And alcohol worked. It really did. I never forget that feeling. And I already had craziness in my head because I knew when I get within a block of a house, I had to straighten up. You know, I had to turn to my mom's great son then, you know what I mean? But around the corner and other places, I can be who I wanted to be. Till I got them within two blocks of the house, I try to walk straight there like wasn't nothing wrong with me. Well, which is really strange because I remember coming in the house. I know I smelled of alcohol. My mom never said anything. I know I smelled of marijuana. She never said anything. And I know it's impossible for her not to know. I went all the way through high school. I went to St. Joseph High School right there in Alameda. I went all the way through high school a teenage alcoholic. And Willie really trips me out is the teachers didn't say anything. I don't tell them they didn't smell Carvel brandy. I could smell that stuff a mile now, you know, because I'm not drinking, you know. I mean, I don't know if this is hereditary disease. I know I have it. That's one thing I make my sponsees know. Be sure, and they have to find out for themselves, that you have carried this gene. I don't think people, like I've heard people say before, I don't think people just come to places like this. It ain't like, I'm going to go check AA out and see what's going on down there. If you in this room, take a good look at your life. Seriously. I mean, I'm glad I made it. This is one of the best things. I mean, I've heard it said, I'm here to save my life. It's one of the best things. I don't think I've done anything better my whole life. I know how to go into programs. I know how to polish up. I know how to get clean. I did not know how to stay clean until the steps came into my life. And I was, you know, I was involved in ministry at one time. Yeah, I could preach a 3-point sermon and go straight to the liquor store. I've never left AA and went that high. And I trip on the spirituality of this program because being in ministry, I know these deacons with these long titles, deacon, elder, bishop, pastor, pope. You know, big titles behind their names and these plaques on the walls. And I know people in this very program that don't even believe, but their lives are more spiritual than these guys with these great big titles behind their names and these big offices and all this. I mean, I ain't trying to put them down. That's what it sounds like. That's what I'm doing. But I met people in these very rooms, man. I mean, and they say people that wouldn't mix. I'm pretty sure there's an atheist, I'm pretty sure there's agnostics, I'm pretty sure there's Buddhists, I'm pretty sure there's Jewish, I'm pretty sure there's Muslims, and should I keep going? And this very room, on one accord, with one purpose, without a hierarchy, and it runs beautifully. I'll tell you, church don't run like this. It does not. The hypocrisy, and I'm a PK, a preacher's kid, so I learned the church from the pew to the pulpit. So I seen a lot of hypocrisy going on and do as I say and not as I do and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow. So I'm really confused. Really confused in a whole lot of ways, you know. And the ministry I came up, they was against this. And when I see Pastor Larry now, I mean, I see him every now and then. I'm calling Pastor Larry. I call him Larry. I said, what's up, Larry? You know, because, you know, I mean, he looked at me like, man, I ain't supposed to do that. Like, you know. But when I read this book says just about every congregation gives AA their blessings. So I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with this dude, you know? Maybe I could have saved a whole lot of misery, you know? But, you know, it all came out of the Bible, you know? And this is a story where I'm going to share one biblical story. Not to offend nobody. It was this generation that was on a 7-day journey. And it took them 40 years to get where they was going. And some of them never made it. And to my life, you know, it took me till I was 49 years old to get here on a journey that did not have to take 49 years. I mean, it did not have to, I mean, wow. When I see young people in the rooms, I'd be like, wow. Because I started coming to, trying to get sober back in 80-something, I don't remember. In the 80s, 1980-something, but I never stuck to it. I never stuck to it, you know, until I got involved. And this book really, the doctor's opinion started making sense because I was too busy trying to make sense out of nonsense for a long time it just didn't make no sense. And one day, everything I was doing did not make no sense. And I didn't think I was insane, Because when I read that, I only heard, I only see one thing, sanity. Oh, these people think I'm crazy. Then when I preview my life, the things I've done were truly insane. I mean, who dreams that they can't walk? I mean, I've done stuff like that. There are people had to help me to my car. Anytime nobody got to help me, like it's okay to drive, but I can't even walk. You know, I mean, seriously. I mean, and I know people, alcoholics and drunks and alcohol drug addicts are telling me, Tom, you need to slow down, man. Now, when alcoholics are telling you this, it's like, man, you're drinking too. Man, I mean, give me your keys. My, that never worked. How you gonna get my keys, man? You know, you go to the party, you know, but no, you ain't taking my keys. We both been drinking. I'm doing the driving. And I ain't going when I lost my car. I know, I remember my neighbor went out of town, and I decided to use his driveway. And I woke up, and my car was not where I parked it at. I remember putting it on the hot list, and the police finally making it and walking me down and said, Mr. Neal, is that your car right there? And they start asking about my evening activities and all this stuff, you know, but I was a mess. That's what it was like. And it ain't too much different from other people. I was out there, you know, and the progression of this disease took me to places I never thought I would be. You know, I never, like I said, grew up in East Oakland. I hung out in places like pool halls, gallon shacks, and the lust of the eyes played a strong role in this, because these guys and these people I tried to pattern after, they had girls, they had jewelry, they had Cadillacs, they had money, and they had all this, the lust of the eyes, the stuff that I seen, but I did not see where this lifestyle was going to take me. That's what the disease ain't going to show you. It's going to show you the glamour, the beauty. And I didn't see what this lifestyle was like. I didn't see no jail sentences. You know, but they're telling me, man, you might as well save up, man, because you might have to bail out one day. I ain't paying that no attention, you know. I did not see a whole bunch. I didn't see homelessness. I didn't see where the progression of this disease was going to take me. I could say I've done all this and sold drugs and all this, but where did I end up? I ended up straight lost on a journey that should never took that long. I straight lost. In the city I was raised up in, if you didn't see me 6 years ago, I've been doing this for 6 years, close to seven. After where I was going, I could not tell you. I was just out and about, headed nowhere, roaming through the city, going nowhere fast. That was my life, you know. Today, if you ask me where I'm going, I can actually answer that question. I can tell you where I'm headed. I can tell you what I'm going to do in the course of a day. You know, because back then, either I was going to get one, I was going to get another one. I just got finished doing one, I need to do another one, and after that one, I need another one. Before that one, and it was like that. Because when I do drugs and alcohol, that's all I do. Forget about paying bills, forget about any of that. I'll get a great idea that will become the only idea. And that only idea, and this program has really given me an awareness. I understand what I didn't understand about this disease I suffer from. Like I said before, make sure you carry this gene. Like I said, I got two brothers. I like this hereditary. I got two brothers that can drink. We kept on the bar. Me and my oldest brother, we ain't got no business touching no kind of mind control substance at all. Me, because we go there. When my other two brothers don't. So if this is hereditary, it skips generations. I would say that because wow. So I decided to go in the program for the last time. I went in this program called Options. And I said, I'll do whatever y'all tell me to do. And people heard me say this before, until they started telling me what to do. Then I didn't want to do anything they told me to do. We all had to stand up and do this stuff called Tai Chi. I used to watch a bunch of guys in the middle of the floor doing Tai Chi, and I would stand in the back of that looking stupid to me. I am not doing that. And I remember one of the counselors, we were sharing one time, I let him know, I hung out on 9th. He said, well, how did you look on 95th Avenue? Yeah. That's when I started doing Tai Chi. Because I drive past 95th today, and I said, wow, now that looks stupid, you know. And, you know, I began to see, because you have to have this thing, this book called A Spiritual Awakening, a Rocket into the Fourth Dimension, a Psychic Change. It's like three or four different names for this thing. I might be paraphrasing it wrong, but the psychic change, I know it has to occur. And I believe my first psychic change, But when I first started this, I wasn't going East Oakland. Forget it. That's where everything took place. I stayed far away from East Oakland as I can get. I remember the SLE I lived in. All the people that you never graduate, that went beyond to the next stage, options, because I went to this program, options. They were sending them to Greg Green was sending his house to East Oakland. I started talking to people around the fellowship. They say, you don't want to go, don't go, don't go. So I remember talking to Dr. Cody, the lady that has this program, and she offered me to live in one of her housings. You know, and I talked to this guy, I asked for his blessings, he said, go ahead on. And one of the best choices, because I don't think back then in the beginning, I know the book says that we can do all type of things that they say we can't do, we can go to these parties and we can do all this stuff, but I don't think that's until you receive this thing called a psychic change. After you receive your psychic change, then maybe, because still today, I still think I can convince myself that it's going to be different. I can still do that. You know, and I like what my friend tells me all the time. He said, time do not equal recovery. You can have 100 years if you live to get that old. That don't mean recovery. I'm not cured of this disease. It's like people that have sugar diabetes, whatever, you know. I'm aware that I have this disease, and you guys tell me just what to do to take care of it, because I don't want to ever live a life of self-destruction again. I really don't. That's one of my big fears, you know. I can still make a conscious decision, because ain't no slip. Make a conscious decision and say, well, forget it, man, you know. That's why they say resentment is the number one offender. And I understand that. They didn't say that I wasn't going to get resentments. I just don't hold on to these things called resentments. You know, I get resentment every day. Yeah, you know. I still live by Children's Hospital. Ain't never no place to park. My first resentment, all those nurses at that hospital parking in front of my door. You know, I got a driveway. Don't get me wrong, but then when I get in the driveway, because my driveway is straight, and if somebody parked me and somebody parked behind me, then they might want to get out. They might have to knock on my door to let me out. I want to knock on their door to let them out. So I really park on the streets, because I'm in the house. I want to come back out. And if you live where I live, I park in front of your door too. Just keep on paying in the parking lot. And that's where I do the work, and it helps me out, you know. Because when I go to hiding, I know I park in front of somebody's door, because I do not want to pay to park. I think parking should be free. I mean, you know, I think it should be free. That's just what I think, you know. But like I say, the progression of this disease took me to places that I really thought I wouldn't be, you know, homeless. Abandoned houses, abandoned cars, you know, I mean, I was out there, you know, and, you know, because I do a drug addict, they couldn't let me back in the house. Eventually, I was going to probably move them out, you know, because I'm the type of drug addict, alcoholic, your rings will come up missing, your watch, you know, this stuff is going to disappear, you know. And I remember my brother said, every time you come by the house, man, there's something wrong we can't find. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, because I lie like a rug, you know. And they start putting two and two together, you know. You know, don't leave your purse in the car and run in the store for a minute. I probably won't take all the money, but I'm going to take something, you know. I'm just like, wow, it feels good not to live like that. And that's where the progression, and I understand, because theft and all that stuff is a part of my addiction. God forbid I ever go back, that whole lifestyle will come back. Immediately. I'm convinced. You know, I did enough. This word you guys taught me called research. You know, and there's another word you guys taught me here. I can't even think of it now, but I didn't have that many. No, mine was again. That other word that besides again, it might come to me.
Relapse?
No, what's not it either. This word you guys taught me.
Obsession?
No, it's not easy. It might come to me. It might come to me. I can't think of it right now. Yet. That word called yet. I didn't have that many yets when I got here. Things I hadn't started doing yet. You know. And I remember when I hadn't started stealing yet. I hadn't started doing drugs yet. I got a yets. But mine wasn't yets. Mine was again. Here I am living in an SLE again. Here I am in a program again. Here I am in jail again and again and again. again. It just kept happening over and over again. I could not figure why. I did not understand. Every time I left Santa Rita and popped open a can of beer, I was reactivating this disease. I tried to read this book, said, trying to overcome my obsession beyond my mental control. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand this disease. The allergic effect of this disease, that once I put alcohol in my system, I cannot stop destroying my life, even if I want to. You know, I'm going to go home walking this way. I'm on my way home. Never make it home. Like, okay. And I thought the people after the club when I did work, and you know, those people that went home and had a couple, I said, they're alcoholics. They can't hang. Now, when I could drink all night long, but the people that could just get us, he can't handle his stuff. You know, his wife or his girlfriend, you know, he's under the Pentecost law and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I could drink all night, but I don't have a problem. See, I just had it twisted. And I didn't understand the first drink. Ain't no one drink ever got nobody drunk. They just can't handle it. One drink, maybe three, four, a couple beers, you know, six pack, maybe, you know. But one drink, I understand that today, how one drink would lead to that many, you know. And I can lie to myself and believe it. I didn't understand that either. You know you're telling a lie. I used to tell myself every Friday, I'm not going to mess my check up. I'm going to spend $150 to get everything I need. I'm going home. I ain't leaving no more. And I actually really think I could do that. I really did. After I spent $150, my mind said, well, you know, $100 more. Then be cool. Then after I spent that $100 more, my mind would say, well, you got this left, and I just might as well go on and just throw it all on the table and just spend it all at the same time. Because once I put alcohol and put this substance in my system, I'm unable to control the amount or even stop. Inanimate objects will run my life and run my life for a long time. Like I said, I got here when I was 48 years old. Didn't do a lot of jail time, a lot of streets, a little bit of county time. I shared this story. I remember when I finally made it to Santa Rita, and the judge was looking, asking me, why did I wait so late in life? It's not that I waited late in life. I just started getting in this type of trouble when I was in my late 40s. That's just how it went, you know. But then when I started going. It's like, wow. Stuff they used to let me go for, they wouldn't do it anymore because you're on paperwork now. Once you're on paperwork, it's a whole lot different. And I can say, you know, I'm not on paperwork no more. What it's like now, my record has been expunged. Not expunged, they got rid of all my felonies, you know. I can actually sign a job application and I can actually write down that I don't have any felonies, or I can write down yes, but they all have been dropped. You know, I can do that type of stuff today. I actually live in an apartment today. I do have a place to live. I got keys. My goodness, that's a miracle. I drive my truck. I got license plates. I got registration. I never had all at the same time. You know, registrations, driver's license, tags, everything. You know, I got them all. You know, it's like, I used to see the police, you know, and I would, even if I didn't do nothing, I'd go the other way. Oh, damn, there were police, man. I used to call it playing Pac-Man. I just turned the other way. And hope they're not behind me, you know. And, you know, just make me take the long way around, you know, because the fact that, you know, I don't know what's going on in these police, and I don't have no driver's license. My tags is bad. I ain't got no insurance. You know, and it's just, you know, now I'd be like, pull me over, man. Yeah, come on, pull me over now, man, you know. And now they don't pull me over. I think I've been stopped twice since I've been to this. Just two times, you know. And I didn't even get a ticket. Wow. This program does work. I used to hear that. And when I got here, enough was enough. I was willing to do, like I say, I was willing. I came in because the books of countless vain attempts, you know. And it's been like again and again and again. And I don't want to have to live in a house with 15 guys again and all that stuff. Ain't nothing normal about living with 15 guys, you know. And I think my higher power set me up because I was on Sycamore Street. And central office was right up the streets. I would walk to central office and I go to just about every meeting. Because I'd only be in the house with 15 guys telling their great war stories about how great they were. But your guys are in here with me. So, you know, the truth of the matter was I was a two-bit drug addict, dope fiend, alcoholic. Really, I wasn't great at nothing, you know. But all that has truly changed, you know. It really has changed. I was able to go to school. I got three associate degrees. I hope you'll be able to use them. Soon my first job, my back goes out. And you see, I walk like Fred Sanford and George Jefferson at the same time. Got a bad back now. I mean, you know, sometimes it's really. I've been trying to straighten it out and exercise, you know. I need a surgery. They don't want to do the surgery. They try to help me out, you know. But I hope to be able to use those. I think I'm going back to school, you know. And now you're talking about trials and tribulations. You know, it's been, in this program, obviously, I've experienced the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, it's been great times. You know? I mean, I can't stay on the mountaintop. I understand. Sometimes I'm down in the valley for no reason whatsoever. Like, why am I feeling like this, you know? But, you know, the valley, down in the valley experiences still help bring me to the mountaintop. I do have mountaintop experiences. And I do have a great deal of gratitude. I'm not an act all the time. But I do have a great, because I find myself complaining about stuff like, you know, people heard me say, go and wash clothes. Damn. But what about the days I didn't have no damn clothes? Seriously, dirty clothes, unshaved, unshoveled. Didn't have a place to take shit, shave, or shower. Thank God for that Facebook at Elmhurst Park. I used to splash water on myself, try to get halfway cleaned up, you know. Go to the nearest St. Vincent de Paul and steal me some new jeans. Now, I think the lady knew what I was doing, you know. I mean, that's how my life was, you know. Now I got a bun, I got an overflow. I give stuff away now. I'm like, wow, you know. I don't even have a job. I don't know. How do I do this? It's only my higher power. Really looking out for me, you know. And I mean, I was holding on to nothing. I couldn't let go. Seriously, I didn't have anything. I got a buddy, you know. I mean, friends, I see my friends, a lot of friends, they be out there, and then, you know, buddies at the bus stop, and he's out of the shopping cart, holding on to nothing. And yeah, hey, Tom, what you just said, man? I went to this program, and, you know, I started doing what these people tell me in AA, and all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. I mean, but I identify because I got 10 minutes. Because I was the same way, you know. I did not think it took all this. It took all this and more, you know. I am really grateful, got a great deal of gratitude, you know, to be here. And I try to show that, you know, because I believe it's a word of action, you know. I try to show that, you know, I try to secretary meetings. I try to speak when I can. I ain't trying to sponsor. I tell my buddy, he got me 3 sponsees, and 2 is enough for me. However, you sponsor 10 people, you're great. Because I mean, 2 or 3, you know, I took 3 people all the way, two people all the way through so far, you know, and that's the blessing when you the complete, the fullness of the whole program is to hear somebody else's fourth and fifth step, to hear that and bring them all the way through is the completion. And I've done that a couple times, and your sponsors do help you more than you help them. You know, I didn't understand that either until I started doing what these people tell me to do. So, you know, I mean, walking this thing instead of just talking this thing, because I could talk a great deal of recovery. And it's just like when I was in SLE, so many guys can speak some recovery, and they'd be the first ones gone. I used to call them 2-week wonders. I wonder how you know for so weak, I wonder how you know so much in 2 weeks, and then wonder where they went. Because they would disappear, you know. They know this stuff, they just can't do it. I said, man, why don't you take all that good advice, turn it around, give it to yourself, and use it. I was one of them guys, I can talk a great talk, but I could not do this. I was wondering, how come I can't do this and everybody else can? I really didn't get that, you know. The steps and the doctor's opinion really, really, because we read the doctor's opinion so many times, I was wondering, you know, when we all stop reading this. And one day, it just came on. One day it came on, the obsession. The phenomenon of craving, all that stuff started making sense, you know. I said, yeah, that's me, you know. Well, once I opened up this reward system in my brain, and I ain't gonna never have enough of what I think I want. Never forget it. You can give a boatload, man, it ain't gonna be enough. You know, I mean, I think I'm running out of time. Really blessed to be here. I do count my blessings today. I try to do this. I don't do this perfect, but I do it. Only thing I do perfect is I stay away from drugs and alcohol. I am aware of what's going to happen to me. God forbid I ever pick up. God forbid, because I'm going to sell everything. I'm going to sell everything I got. You'll see me with the flat screen TV, sell it. The computer, I'll sell it. And whatever else I think I can pick up, the rings, the watch, I'll sell everything. First, I'll help you sell all your stuff. Then we're going to sell all my stuff. Then we're going to start stealing stuff. Then I'm going to go to jail. Oh, I already know it, because it's the insanity. And what I call true insanity is to know what's going to happen and do it anyway. Because I already know what's going to happen, you know, and to do it anyway, you know. And what keeps me is, you know, I got real friends today, you know. Bill said fair weather friends, you know, the people that hung around just because I had money or just because I had, I don't have fair weather friends today. I got friends, real friends today, sisters in sobriety, brothers in sobriety, you know. Best thing I ever done. And I thought that was stunted, you know, when people used to say that, but it's the best thing I ever done. I want to stay here because I like what's been happening in my life. I really do. It took me a long time, you know. But when my mom come by and she had that look on her face, you know, I understand that, you know. My brother's telling me, man, you know what, you're killing moms. How am I killing moms? Doing what I want to do. Well, you know, worry and stress give people ulcers, heart attacks, and strokes. I think I said enough. Hope everybody enjoy this evening and have a great holiday.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.